Today we have the privilege of studying the 36th parak of Yeshayahu, chapter Lamed Vav. This is the first fully narrative parak in Yeshayahu. It is not presented as a nevuah, but rather as a story. And it forms a continuum, together with parak Lamed Zayin, which we will study tomorrow, detailing the events of 701 BCE. Some brief historical background is required in order to understand the story in this parak. I call it a story, but it is in truth not really a story in the modern sense in which we use the word. Rather, it is the meaning of a story, or perhaps we should better say, the meaning of a series of events. It is important to understand that sometime towards the end of the 8th century, Chizkiyahu became king of Yehuda. Chizkiyahu was the son of Ahaz, and unlike his father, Chizkiyahu led a religious revival, returning Israel to worship of God, more accurately, returning Yehuda to worship of God. Part of Chizkiyahu's plan involved a revolt against Assyria, ceasing to regard Assyria as the overlord of Yehuda. This revolt probably took place sometime around close to the year 705 BCE. I say a revolt. The revolt took the form of ceasing to pay taxes to Assyria, ceasing to recognize Assyrian overlordship, not the form of a military revolt at the first instance, but rather just ceasing to pay taxes. And that probably took place in 705, because it was in 705 that the previous king of Assyria, Sargon II, died on the battlefield in what's today near Armenia. He died and was unburied. The Assyrian Empire fell into a brief period of decline, and Chizkiyahu and many other kings in the area thought that Assyria would now be permanently eclipsed. Very shortly afterwards, however, certainly by 703 BCE, if not earlier, Sancheriv, who claims to be the son of Sargon, took control of Assyria, and 2 years later, in 701 BCE, he began a campaign to return to Assyrian control all those kingdoms along the Mediterranean who had rebelled against Assyria and ceased to pay taxes. He set out from his capital sometime in the early spring of 701 BCE, marched south, certainly conquered the city of Sidon, or Sidon, continued along the coast, conquered the cities belonging to Tzidka, king of Ashkelon, which at the time included the cities of Bnei Brak and Yafo, the area that's near today Tel Aviv, and then marched south through the area of Plishtim, enforced his control over the kings of Plishtim, reached the city of Lachish by building a huge siege ramp. And Lachish is the first of the major cities of Yehuda, which Sancheriv conquered, and conquered many other cities of Yehuda, approached Yerushalayim, but did not conquer Yerushalayim. By the way, the siege ramp at Lachish, which the Assyrians used to conquer the city, is still standing today, 2,700 years later, and it can still be seen. The city of Lachish, from the period of Chizkiyahu, the city gate is still there, and the Assyrian siege ramp is still there. It's interesting to see it if you have the opportunity to do so, and you can also look on the web for pictures of the Assyrian siege ramp at Lachish. L-A-C-H-I-S-H. In any case, in the year 701, Sancheriv reaches Yerushalayim. Sancheriv does not succeed in conquering Yerushalayim. The Assyrian texts do not give us any information as to why Sancheriv failed in conquering Yerushalayim. Sefer Melachim records briefly a statement that Chizkiyahu paid tribute to Assyria, and as a result of this bribe, the Assyrians seem to have left and ceased to attempt to conquer further in the country. But Yeshayahu in these chapters gives not the record of the events, but rather the meaning of these events. What does it mean when Sancheriv threatened Yerushalayim? What does it mean that he almost succeeded in conquering the city? And why did he ultimately not succeed in conquering the city? These are the questions which Yeshayahu engages in telling the story of these events. Again, his focus is not on the story per se, rather his focus is on the meaning of these events. The perek begins with the encounter between Sanherib's emissaries and Chizkiyahu's emissaries. And they engage in a sort of parley, or discussion. And the center of discussion is, should Yerushalayim fall to the Assyrians? Should Yerushalayim surrender to the Assyrians? Is it worth withstanding the Assyrians? Is it worth standing up to the Assyrians? Should Jerusalem just surrender? It's important to understand that the idea of demanding the surrender of a city is a common technique in ancient military tactics. It is used in order to try to get the city to surrender without a battle in order to save military equipment. The attackers will always try and get the city to surrender without a battle, and the defenders give some claims as to why the city should not surrender. This type of discussion is common, but usually the discussion centers around known themes, and these themes would include such ideas as the attackers are strong, the defenders are weak. The attackers have allies, the defenders have none. The attackers have provisions, the defenders have none. The attackers will offer good terms for surrender and bad terms if they conquer the city. In other words, the attackers will allow the defenders to live if they surrender, but will kill them if they do not surrender. So these are the normal ways in which siege speeches move along. However, in our chapter, we find the siege speeches of the Assyrian king to have a very different character. And this is increasingly true as we move through this chapter and on to Perek Lamed Zayin. The siege speeches of the Assyrian king are not only about issues of military defense, about military power, about political allies. Rather, they are more and more take a theological approach. More and more they are about, does God have the power to save Yerushalayim? And so what shapes up here is a battle between Sanherib and God. And I want to focus on how Yeshayahu frames that battle and turns the events into a battle between Sanherib and God. And this, of course, explains the outcome and the enormous significance that this battle has in Sefer Yeshayahu. So let us begin. We will read as many of the psukim as we can. Vayi ba'arba'esre shana la'melech Chizkiyahu, Allah, Sanherib, melech Ashur, kol arei Yehuda ha'bitzurot vayitpasem. So it was in the 14th year of King Chizkiyahu. Sanherib, the king of Assyria, went up against all the fortified cities of Yehuda and conquered them. Vayishlach melech Ashur et pasuk bet. Vayishlach melech Ashur et Rav Shakei milachish Yerushalama el melech Vayishlach melech Ashur et Rav Shakei milachish Yerushalayma el hamelech Chizkiyahu bechel kaved. Vayamod bit alat haberecha ha'elyona. The king of Assyria sent Rav Shakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem to King Chizkiyahu with a great army. He, that is Rav Shakeh, stood at the canal leading from the upper pool, and the field at the road leading to the washer field. Now, the exact location of this is not entirely clear. But as I suggested when we studied Perek Zayin, where the same location is mentioned, this appears to be some location directly connected to the water system of Yerushalayim, a system from which the defenders have a sort of vantage point over the attackers, but can still talk to them, and which is related to the larger water system of Yerushalayim, which is Yerushalayim's, on the one hand, source of possible weakness, but on the other hand, by the time of Chizkiyahu, the water system had been strengthened, and it indicated that Yerushalayim could withstand the siege. Who is the Rav Shakeh, or who is Rav Shakeh as he is called in Tanakh? He's given the personal name Rav Shakeh. We know from Assyrian texts that the Rav Shakeh is the sort of secretary of the interior, the person who is in charge of managing the king's household. He rarely goes out on military campaigns. Here, though, he takes a central stage in the military campaign, and Chazal see the Rav Shakeh as a Jewish apostate, a Jew who had gone over to the Assyrian side. And we'll see as we go through the parak what the basis for this pirush is. Vayetze Elav, Pasuk Gimel, Vayetze Elav, who represents the Jews in speaking to the Rav Shakei? Vayetze Elav, El Yakim ben Chilkiyahu Asher Halabait, Veshevna HaSofer, Veyoach ben Asaf HaMazkir. Three officials from Chizkiyahu's court go out to him, Eliakim ben Chilkiyahu Asher HaBait, Eliakim ben Chilkiyahu, who is the manager of the king's household, we've seen him before in chapter 22, Veshevna HaSofer, Shevna the scribe, whom we've also seen in Perek 22, Veyoach ben Asaf HaMazkir, Yoach ben Asaf, who had the job of Mazkir. Mazkir, it appears in Tanakh, is not a secretary per se, but rather an announcer, someone who transmits the king's proclamations to the people. He mentions the king's proclamations. Vayomar alehem Rav Shakei. Rav Shakei says to these people, this is the first siege speech. Imru na el Chizkiyahu, ko amar hamelech hagadol melech Ashur. Speak unto Chizkiyahu and say to him, thus says the great king, the king of Assyria. And the great king is one of the titles that the king of Assyria claims for himself. Ma habitachon hazeh asher batachta. What is this trust that you have trusted? In other words, in whom are you trusting? The king of Assyria asks Chizkiyahu. And this is the theme of this entire siege speech. It is about whom does Chizkiyahu trust. There are two possibilities. Both of those are discussed, and both of those are dismissed. Amarti, Pasuk Hei, Amarti, Ach dvar svataim etza ugvura la milchama. Ata, ami vatachta ki mararta bi? I have said to myself, Rav Shakei says, you, or rather, Sancheriv, the king of Assyria, says, and Rav Shakei is reporting his words, I, the king of Assyria, have said, you, Chizkiyahu, must think that strategy and planning for war, etzau gvura la milchama, strategy and bravery for war, better, are all contained in Dvar Svatayim. It is enough to be able to speak bravely, in order to do bravery. In other words, the accusation here is that Yuchizkiyahu underestimate the actual power needed for war. It's not enough to talk the talk, you actually have to walk the walk. Ata, ami vatachta ki maranatabi. Bottom line. Ata in Tanakh with an ayin always indicates the approaching bottom line. Now, upon whom are you trusting that you are rebelling against me? Hine vatachta al mishenet hakane haratzutz hazeh al Mitzrayim, asher yisamech ish alav uvav chapo unkavah, ken paro melech Mitzrayim lechol habotchim alav. First possibility. You are relying on Egypt. Egypt is here described as a cane made of a broken reed. Now, a cane made of a broken reed is a notoriously unreliable cane. If you lean on it, it will pierce, come into your hand and pierce your hand. In other words, it will cause you damage to those who rely upon it. So is Paro, the king of Egypt, to all those who trust in him. In other words, Paro is a notoriously unreliable source of strength. And he will deal with this in greater detail in the coming Pesukim. V'chi tomar elai el Hashem Elokeinu v'atbatachnu. Halo hu asher hisir Chizkiyahu et bamotav v'et mizbechotav v'yomer li Yehuda v'Yerushalayim lifnei hamizbeach hazeh tishtachavu. The second possibility that Sancheriv presents is, if you say to me that you trust in God, our God, in other words, if you say to me that you trust in God, the God of Judah, don't you know? Halo hu asher hiskir Chizkiyahu et bamotav et mizbechotav. Chizkiyahu removed the high places and the altars of your God, and commanded all of Yehudah and Yerushalayim to bow down before the Mizbeach and Yerushalayim. In other words, Chizkiyahu removed the altars that were dedicated to divine worship that were in various places in the country, in the land of Yehuda. Historically, we have a bit of archaeological evidence which suggests that in this period of Chizkiyahu, altars to God outside of Yerushalayim were removed. But more significantly, the altars to God outside of Yerushalayim are forbidden by Sefer Devarim. And Sefer Melachim records that Chizkiyahu did in fact remove all of the altars outside of Yerushalayim and made the one single altar in the Beit HaMikdash the only legitimate altar on which Jews could worship. Now this accords with the laws of Sefer Devarim, and Chizkiyahu is praised for this in Sefer Melachim. But Rav Shakei, or at least Sancheriv, sees this as a terrible act of heresy and impiety. How could a king allow himself to remove altars to God? Don't you know the more altars, the more food the god gets? The more food the god gets, the happier the god is. The happier the god is, the more the god is likely to defend the city. If you remove the altars, the god is less likely to defend your city because he'll be hungry. Don't you know that, Chizkiyahu, the Syrian king asks? And perhaps based on the intimate knowledge of what's going on in Yehuda here, Chazal suggests that the Rav Shakeh is someone who has that intimate knowledge, someone who is a Jew who has gone over to the Assyrian side. The Assyrian king, in the continuation of the siege speech, resumes the two themes which he's begun. First of all, the possibility of help from Egypt. Second of all, the possibility of help from God. Psukim Chet and Tet deal with the possibility of help from Egypt. Egypt, as is known in the ancient world, is a source of horses. It is the way that is the easiest way to get horses. The Egyptian kings promise riders and horses to those who will support them. And in fact, they have not provided Chizkiyahu with any riders or horses. And so now the Rav Shakeh asks Chizkiyahu, do you really believe the Egyptians will give you horses and riders? Ve'ata hit'arevna et Adoni ha'melech Ashur, ve'etna lecha alpaim susim, im tuchal atet lecha rochvim aleihem. This is an ironic taunt which Rav Shakeh delivers to Chizkiyahu. Come and give a bet with my lord, the king of Assyria. Hit'arev means give a bet. Ve'etna lecha alpaim susim, I'll give you 2,000 horses. Im tuchal atet lecha rochvim aleihem. I'll give you 2,000 horses if you can get riders for them. In other words, can you really provide? Do you really have the military forces to defend your city? You don't even have 2,000 riders. You don't have 2,000 soldiers who could ride horses. Even if I were to give you the horses, in other words, you are very weak. Ve'ech tashiv et pnei fachat achat avdei Adoni haketanim, vativtach lecha al Mitzrayim lerechev ulfarashim. How could you turn back? How could you deflect the face of one of the smaller servants of my Lord? The syntax here is somewhat difficult. Pnei fachat achat avdei Adoni. How could you deflect the face or the presence of a governor, of one of the small servants of my king? One of the small servants of my lord. Fachat is from the is a term we find used in reference to the Assyrian Empire. In Tanakh, it means a provincial governor. How could you turn back the face of one of my lord's servants? You rely on Egypt for horses and riders. In other words, you rely on Egypt for horses and riders, and you don't even have the forces to deflect the small representative of the Syrian Empire. Ve'ata hamibaladei Hashem aliti al haaretz hazot lahashchita. Hashem amar elai aleha al haaretz hazot lahashchita. Pasuk Yud returns to the theme of reliance on God. Don't you know? Is it without God's support that I have come up against this country to destroy it? God said to me, come up against this country and destroy it. Sancheriv here claims a divine mandate. Now, the claim is somewhat spurious because Sancheriv seems to have a limited understanding of the nature of God based on his perception of how God is to be worshipped. He seems to understand God as some kind of ancient Near Eastern deity who can be patiated and bribed by food and multiple altars, rather than the idea of God as a universal sovereign who demands obedience. But the point here is that he sees himself as representing might. Might makes right. And therefore, how can you possibly claim that you are on God's side? I am the more powerful one. I must be on God's side. Again, the idea of looking at the physical, looking at power rather than looking at divine commandments. That concludes the first siege speech, and we now move to this introduction to the second siege speech. How do the Jews respond? Psukim Yud Aleph Yud Bet detail the interaction. around the Jews' response. Vayomer Eliakim v'shevnavi yo'achil Rav Shakei, Daber na levadecha aramit, ki shom'im anachnu, ve'al tedaber elenu yehudit, be'oznei ha'am asher al ha'choma. Eliakim shevna and yo'ach say to Rav Shakei, speak to us in Aramaic, because we understand it. Don't speak to us in Jewish, in other words, in Hebrew, in the ears of the people who are on the wall. Don't speak to us in a way that the people will understand. Speak directly to the leadership. Don't involve the population. Of course, Rav Shakei laughs. Vayomer in Pasuk Yudbet, Vayomer Rav Shakei, Ha'el Adonecha ve'elacha shalachani Adoni ledaber et hadvarim ha'ele? Halo al ha'anashim ha'yoshvim al ha'choma, le'echol et sohatam ve'lishtot et meimei ragleihem imachem. So the Rav Shakei responds with almost a taunt and says, is it to your master and to you that my master has sent me to speak these words? Rather, it is to the people who are sitting on the wall, who are eating their dung and drinking the water, drinking their urine with you. He's saying that his goal is to speak not to the leadership of the Judean monarchy, not to the king and the king's court, but rather to the populace. Speak to the populace, get the populace to surrender, get the populace to revolt against their king Chizkiyahu, get the populace to behead Chizkiyahu and deliver him to the Assyrian king. Why would the populace do this? Well, he details the reasons. They are eating their dung because they are starving. The siege is starving out the people, and people are more and more inclined to surrender. And this is, of course, the goal of the siege, to get people to surrender without having to go to the expense of a military campaign. Pasuk Yud Gimel begins the second siege speech, which is directed at the populace, not at the leadership. Vayamor Rav Shakei vayikra bekol gadol yehudit vayomer shim'u et divrei ha'melech ha'gadol melech Ashur. This pasuk is the basis for Chazal's claim that Rav Shakei is a Jew who went over to the Assyrian side. Rav Shakei stands up and calls out in a great voice in Judean, in other words, in Hebrew. He says, hear the words of the great king, the king of Assyria. Pasuk Yudalad, Ko amar ha'melech. Thus says the king, who is the king. The king is the king of Assyria. Sancheri. Al yashil lachem Chizkiyahu, ki lo yuchal lehatzil etchem. Don't let Chizkiyahu entice you, because he will not be able to save you. Va'al yavtach etchem Chizkiyahu el Hashem leimor. Hatzel yatzilenu Hashem. Let Chizkiyahu not cause you to rely on God, saying, God will save us. Lo tinaten ha'ir hazot biad melech Ashur. The city will not be given over into the hands of the king of Assyria. Pasuk Tetzayin, Al tishme'u el Chizkiyahu. Don't listen to Chizkiyahu. Kicho amar ha'melech Ashur. Rather, thus says the king of Assyria. The pasuk says ha'melech Ashur, but we have to understand it as the king of Assyria. Asu iti v'racha utzu'u elai. V'ichlu ish gafno v'ish te'enato. Ushetu ish mevoro. He says, come and make a covenant with me, a covenant which will be sealed with a blessing. Come out to me and let each one of you eat the fruit of your vine and each one of you the fruit of your fig tree and drink each one of you the water in your own pit. In other words, you will each have your own little farm. But where will that farm be? Pasuk Yudzayin. It will not go back to your own farms, rather. Ad bo'i v'lakachti etchem el eretz ke'artzechem, eretz dagan v'tirosh, eretz lechem uchramim. I will come and I will take you to a country which is like your country, a land of wheat and of wine, a land of bread and vineyards. In other words, a fruitful land. He is promising exile, but exile sweetened, an exile in which they will get their own lands. And in fact, the Assyrian policy is to exile people who surrender or who are conquered, and to give them a certain amount of territory. But the idea is to make them exile them to a foreign country, make them totally dependent on the Assyrian king, destroy their ethnicity, and make them loyal servants of the Assyrian king, who have no connection to the land other than the knowledge that is the king who gave them this land. Pen yasit etchem Chizkiyahu leimor, Hashem yatzileinu. Lest Chizkiyahu cause you to, let Chizkiyahu seduce you, saying, God will save us. And now Pasuk Yudchet is the proof that God could not save the Jews. And here is the point at which the battle shapes up into a battle between Sancheriv and God, rather than a battle between Chizkiyahu and Sancheriv. Pasuk Yudchet, the end of the Pasuk, the key question in this parak. Hahitzilu Elohei Hagoyim Ish et Artso Miyad Melech Ashur. Did the gods of other nations save their lands from the hands of the king of Assyria? In other words, the gods of all nations are equal. There is nothing distinct or special about the God of the Jews. Just like the gods of all nations are less powerful than the king of Assyria, so too is the God of the Jews less powerful. Pasuk Yutet, Aye Elohei Hamatz ve'Arpad, Aye Elohei Sfarvayim, v'chi hitzilu et Shomron miyadi. Where is the God of Hamat and Arpad? Where is the God of Sfarvayim? Did they save Shomron from my hand? In other words, the gods of no cities have saved their cities. Why do you think your God is different? Pasuk Kaf, 20. Mi bechol Elohei ha'aratzot ha'ele, asher hitzilu et artzam miyadi. Ki atzil Hashem et Yerushalayim miyadi. Who among all the gods of these countries save their lands from my hand, that God should save Jerusalem from my hand? Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Vayacharishu velo anu oto davar. They were silent and they did not answer him at all. Ki mitzvat hamelech hi lemor lo ta'anuhu. It was the command of the king saying, do not answer him. Chizkiyahu commands the loyalty of the Judean populace. He tells the people of Judah, don't answer, and the people of Judah don't answer this siege speech. Siege speech which fundamentally tries to undermine not only the power of Chizkiyahu, but the power of God. And it implies that just as all the gods of the nations were powerless to stop Sancheriv, so too is the God of Yehuda, the God of Yerushalayim, powerless to stop Sancheriv. Sancheriv sees the world as a hierarchy, in which he stands above the gods, and certainly if he stands above the gods of larger kingdoms, he also stands above the God of Yehuda. The people do not respond to this speech, but there is a response nevertheless, which is detailed in the beginning of the next parak. The response is that the people of the court tear their clothes. This is perhaps the source for the halakha of tearing one's clothes upon hearing or seeing an act of cheruf and giduf, an act of public blaspheming of God. This Sancheriv here, standing at the gates of Yerushalayim, claims that God is on par or below the gods of other nations. This is a public blasphemy, and the result of this is that the people of Chizkiyahu's court tear their clothes. First, though, in Pasuk Kafbet, Vayavo El Yakim ben Chizkiyahu Asher al Abayit Beshevna HaSofer VeYoach ben Asaf HaMazkir El Chizkiyahu. They come to the three officials whom Chizkiyahu sent to parley with the Assyrians. Eliakim ben Chilkiyahu, the chief of the king's household staff. Shevna HaSofer, Shevna the recorder. Yoach ben Asaf, the announcer. They come to Chizkiyahu, Kru'ei Vigadim, with torn clothes. And they speak to him that which Rav Shakei had said. And the first pasuk of Perek Lamed Zayin, Chizkiyahu too tears his clothes and comes into the Beit HaMikdash. And Perek Lamed Zayin details the continuation of this story, which involves an interaction between Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu becomes an active participant in Perek Lamed Zayin, and that is the material which we will take up tomorrow.